This episode may contain content of a graphic nature, including descriptions of physical and sexual violence against adults, children, and animals. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, everyone. I'm Tanya.
And I'm Talia.
And we are Crimes and Consequences, a true crime podcast. Hi, Talia.
Hi, Tanya.
How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Good.
I'd like to welcome everyone back to another episode of Crimes and Consequences. I have a gruesome one for everyone today.
I know you've been hinting about this, and I'm super excited in a really sick and twisted way to hear this.
It's horrible. Oh. There is violence against children, animals.
What?
Domestic violence. Horrible, horrible torture. So if any of those things are something that you don't want to hear today, I'm just warning you.
Okay.
Not you, Talia, because you're stuck here.
I'm stuck.
But it's graphic.
It's gruesome.
And it's a long episode.
Okay.
So.
Wow. How do I feel like my mood's going to be changed in an hour?
Yeah, really. I know. Before I start, if I could just ask everyone to hit the subscribe or follow button on whatever podcast app you're listening to, that would be wonderful. And I'm also going to add that this takes place in Quebec, in the French area of Canada.
I'm not French.
I'm not French either.
I don't have a French accent.
Me either. So I'm going to pronounce these names with my American Midwestern accent. I understand that I may flub them a little bit.
She will.
So I apologize ahead of time. I'm trying. I took some college French, but that was like 25 years ago. So
everybody that listens to us expects us to pronounce the names wrong.
I know. The names and the city. So
I'm all right with it.
Please bear with me.
Let's do this.
Okay. The episode today is about a cult that originated in the province of Quebec, Canada, like I mentioned, in the 1980s. The head of the cult was a man named Rock Terrio. And his journey into becoming the leader of a cult started when he was in his late 20s, when he became fascinated with the Seventh-day Adventists, which is an offshoot of the Protestant Christian religion. Rock was raised in a very strict Catholic household, so he already was educated in the basis of what the Adventists understood. It all boils down to worshiping the Holy Trinity.
Okay.
Okay. However, they differ from other Christian denominations and believe that you should live a modest life and recommend a vegetarian diet, although they do eat meat occasionally. Rock adopted the vegetarian diet and quit drinking alcohol. He was a bit of an alcoholic. He became fascinated with the Old Testament of the Bible and its very strict views of the roles of men and women.
Oh, boy. I already see where this is going.
I know. I'm setting it up, girl. He obsessed about the apocalypse and the end of times. To earn money, Rock sold Adventist literature door-to-door.
People buy that?
I know.
They're going to buy this literature?
Back in the 70s, I think they did.
Okay, I don't know. Don't come knocking on my door with that.
I know. I'm not answering. And when he excelled, higher-ups in the organization allowed him to give workshops on quitting smoking, which, along with alcohol, was prohibited.
Wait, workshops on quitting smoking?
Yes.
Okay.
And
this is all connected?
Yeah, sponsored with the Seventh-day Adventists.
Okay.
While giving his workshops, Rock met a woman named Giselle, with whom he started a relationship. Rock had been married previously, but that relationship ended. But it did produce two sons, Rock Jr. and Francois.
Francois.
While with Giselle and while running the quit smoking seminars, Rock developed a following. And many of the original followers were with him till the end. They were Solange Bouillard, she was 21 at the time, Chantal Labrie, 19, Francine Laflamme, 18, Nicole Ruel, 20, Josie Peltier, 20, Jacques Fissette, he was in his mid-20s, and Claude Ouellette, who was 24.
So they're all young adults,
pretty much. They're all very young. And you don't have to keep track of them at the moment.
Okay.
Okay. All of these people started hanging around Giselle's apartment, and although they had other residences elsewhere, many still lived with their parents, they stayed at Giselle's over the weekend and eventually just started staying there full time. Rock enjoyed having a following, and he preached to them, warning them of the rapture when Jesus would be coming back to bring his followers to heaven, and encouraged them all to drop out of college. Why do you need an education if Jesus is coming soon?
Makes sense.
Totally does.
He sounds like a narcissist.
Oh, he is. Giselle would sometimes get jealous of the attention the young women seemed to feel for Rock, but she trusted that he would be faithful.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. In 1977, Rock and his followers traveled to Lake Rousseau, that's in an area in Ontario, for a retreat for Adventists. At the retreat, Rock met Gabrielle Lavallee, and she was from Quebec, and Yolande Guinenbert, and she was from France. So they were French speakers, and they ended up joining his group, although Yolande did not stay for very long. After the retreat, Rock decided that he and the group needed to form their own commune. It was just getting to be very tight in Giselle's apartment, and Rock wanted to move them somewhere where they could be basically their own society. The group moved to St. Marie, which is about 65 kilometers south of Quebec City. There they established the Healthy Living Clinic, which was a holistic medicine establishment. You could get organic food and alternative medicine literature to help you cure any disease you may have. During one of Rock's sermons, he told the flock that the apocalypse would be coming soon, in the near future, specifically February 17th, 1979.
Oh, he's got the date.
He does. That's how smart he is, Talia. He told them they would have to head further into the wilderness. They traveled, and Rock decided they would settle in a remote area of Quebec. It was 22 kilometers north of St. George's and was along this lake that was called Lac Sec, but that means dry lake, which was about 4 hours from the nearest road. So they are deep in the wilderness, and the winters are very harsh there too, just letting everyone know. The group spent the next several weeks constructing buildings on the land because when I tell you they went there, there's nothing. It's wilderness. So they have to start from the ground up. They're living in tents while they're constructing buildings. They would rise at 5 a.m., work until well past sunset. The first building was a log cabin that was used to be the main living quarters for the group, and it was finally done in September 1978. I mean, it's a really crude building, too. The floors were made of just slices of wood that were cut from tree stumps that were just pounded into the ground. The ceiling was bark-covered logs. It was just one big room, had a kitchen, a fireplace, a well, and a really large wooden kitchen table. The members slept in bunks against the far end of the cabin, with really no walls for privacy, so again, it's just crude. When the group settled in, Rock had a symbolic ceremony that celebrated their break from regular society, and during the ceremony, he gave all the members new names. I won't bother to list them, because I don't want to confuse anyone, because I was confused, frankly. But just know that Rock renamed himself Moses.
Oh, how convenient.
Exactly. But I'm going to continue to call him Rock. I refuse to call him Moses. The group worked hard and were always hungry and sleep deprived, but they did have good times too. During the evenings, Rock would entertain the group by performing elaborate skits for them.
Stop it.
I know. I just have to set the scene, right? Sometimes acting out the more outlandish things he did while traveling around with Giselle in their early days. He would often dress up in a turban or a black biker's leather jacket and use the garden hose as like a microphone. You know, it was hysterical.
Sounds so funny.
Other commune members would sometimes dress up too in wigs or clown costumes and act out plays created by Rock.
Jeez. Okay.
In October of 1978, Giselle, who was 6 months pregnant with Rock's child, they had gotten married earlier that year in January, just prior to their move to this new location. And she had mentioned that the single women in the commune were starting to feel lonely because apparently she talked to them. They gave Rock the idea that he would be the one to fill their lonely nights for all the single ladies, giving them access to all his awesomeness. And that wasn't what Giselle wanted, because when she discovered what was happening, and she discovered because Nicole, who was one of the members, told Giselle that she and Rock were having sex.
Can you really hide it? There's just this little cabin.
I know.
Are they sneaking off in the woods?
Yeah, probably.
I guess so.
It's a possibility. So that really crushed Giselle. She really got upset. Because here she's thinking she's married to Rock.
Obviously. She's having his baby.
Yeah, she's having his baby, like, they're together. She ran from the building, and Rock ran after her. When he caught up with her, he pushed her to the ground and was choking her. He got on top of her, he's choking her. He screamed in her face that he was Moses, and he was her master, that she needed to obey him. And if she didn't, the Lord was going to crush her skull.
What?
When Giselle started to protest, he yanked her to her feet and gave her an ultimatum. Either she could return to the commune or leave and trek the 22 kilometers on foot to the nearest road. She cried all the way back to the cabin. She decided to return, convinced that if she tried to leave, Rock was probably going to try and kill her.
And besides that, that's quite a journey through, I'm assuming, woods and wilderness.
Yeah, it's like October. So it's probably pretty cold.
And who knows what critters are out there.
Yeah, and there's animals. Exactly. After Rock had sex with Nicole, he then announced to the commune that all other marriages were annulled except for he and Giselle's.
So some of them were married couples?
Yeah, he had previously married some of the other members involuntarily to one another. There was one married couple that were actually legally married. That was Maurice and Jacques Grenier. And he married Solange and Claude.
So he just picked them.
He just picked them. He said, you're going to marry this one and you're going to marry this one. And Jacques and Maurice were already married. So he said everybody else's marriage is annulled except for Jacques and Maurice because they were legally married. But everybody else, no. This made Claude a little upset because even though he had involuntarily married Solange, he grew to love her and she was pregnant with his baby at the time. But when he went to Rock and said, what the hell, basically, Rock said, your marriage just really isn't working out for you and Solange really doesn't even love you.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah. As Rock began to enjoy the company of most of the women in the group, he also began drinking again heavily. He often would perform hours-long sermon in his drunken state.
Oh, my God. I can't think of anything worse than listening for hours to a drunk man talk about God.
Into the late, late hours of the night, early morning.
Oh, Lord, have mercy.
If anyone dared to fall asleep, he would beat them. They went into the late night, and these people are working hard outside for probably 16 hours. They're exhausted. He would grow violent when he drank. Once when Maurice Grenier ate two pancakes without permission from Rock in the fall of 1978, he punished her by punching her and breaking two of her ribs. She was pregnant at the time.
Really?
Really.
Two pancakes?
For two pancakes.
Was Rock working?
No.
He wasn't. I knew it.
No, Rock did not work. I believe he had back pain, but also...
Oh, my back. It hurts. I would love to help you guys.
Exactly.
But...
Yes.
I got to listen to God and...
Yeah, he's got to go pray. Rock also liked to pick on Maurice's little son, Samuel.
So there were children there.
Yes, there were children there. Maurice and Jacques had children. At the time when I'm telling you this story, they had two children, Samuel and Miriam. And Miriam was older than Samuel. So I'm thinking right now at the point in the story, Samuel's still a baby. So I think probably Miriam is probably only about two. But Rock liked to pick on Samuel.
The baby?
The baby. Like when Samuel cried, Rock told Jacques, his father, to strip him naked and roll him around in the snow.
What?
Like that's going to make him stop crying?
That's just to be mean.
It is. And he was always mean to the children that weren't his biologically. And I'll tell you more later.
Okay.
Maurice began speaking out about wanting to leave the commune and Rock got wind of it. Rock told Jacques that he had to discipline Maurice and told him he had to cut off one of her toes with an axe.
Wait, Rock is telling Maurice's husband, Jacques, that he has to cut off his wife's toe?
To discipline her.
With an axe.
Yes. Jacques didn't want to do it, and he hesitated, but Rock goaded him on. He accused him of not having any balls and of being, quote unquote, a faggot. Rock told him he had to do it in order to assert his dominance over his wife, and that if Jacques wasn't going to do it, Rock was going to chop off all of her toes.
Oh, man, that's a hard position to be in.
Yes. Reluctantly, Jacques took the axe from Rock and cut off one of Maurice's baby toes. However, after being able to mutilate his wife, Jacques became a little more comfortable when Rock used him as one of his main enforcers of the punishments he would think up. Jacques also told himself, though, that if he didn't do what Rock wanted him to do, and not only as it applied to Maurice, but to everyone else in the commune, that Rock would end up doing something much worse.
I wonder what that does to a human psyche. At first, you're very hesitant, but as we all know, we get desensitized to things.
Yes.
I wonder if you get desensitized to being the enforcer.
I wonder. You must. You must have to rationalize it too, which he is doing. After living in the wilderness for nearly 2 years, in November of 1980, the commune got a new member. His name was Guy Vier, but I'll call him Guy. That's how they would say it in French. Guy had mental illness issues, and he had heard about Rock and the commune from the television. Like, there must have been a news story or something. He decided that he needed to join the commune to escape society. He felt like he needed to find a quieter and more simple way of life. When he made his way to the group, Rock ordered Gabrielle. Now, Gabrielle is one of the women that he met when he traveled to Lake Rousseau, and Gabrielle is a nurse by trade. Rock ordered Gabrielle to give Guy a total physical and mental exam. He was immediately put to work, chopping wood and helping with the stocking up of provisions for the winter. He wasn't allowed to stay in the main building with the others, but Rock had him sleep in a storage shed, apart from everyone else. In early 1981, Rock presented Guy with a contract that stated he could move into a small room that was attached to the main building as long as he agreed to become the full-time babysitter slash nanny for three of the commune children. It was Solange and Claude's son, two-year-old Simon, and then Maurice and Jacques' two children, Samuel, who by then was two, and Miriam, who was four.
So in those 2 years, they've added on to that building. They've got these children, and now they've got a man with mental illness is the daycare provider?
Yes.
Okay.
Not just daycare provider. He's taking care of these children 24/7.
What?
Yes.
They're not with their parents at all?
No. They have also added other children to the commune, but the other children are Rock's biological children.
Okay? Oh, yeah, because he's with all the ladies.
Yes. So he had fathered three children by then, one with Giselle, one with Solange, even though she's also got a child with Claude, and one with Nicole. But as I mentioned, he always treated his children differently than the others. Like, he allowed them to live and sleep in the main building in order to grow up with him.
That's so sad for all those other children.
I know. So Guy wasn't allowed to babysit or caretake for the other children. As payment for him being the nanny for three kids, Guy got a small wood stove to keep himself warm, a case of 24 home-brewed beers, two hens, a rooster, and one meal a day.
I don't even know what to say about that. That's fucking stupid.
The children, as I mentioned, lived with Guy 24 hours a day. He had to make their food, wash their clothes, change their diapers. He never got any rest because besides nanny duty, he also had to chop wood, do construction, and clean during the day, and then take care of the children at night. So I don't know who's actually taking care of them during the day. Maybe the four-year-old is watching the two-year-olds. I don't know. On March 23rd, 1980, Rock threw a party to celebrate that his two sons from his first marriage were coming to live at the commune. By then, Rock Jr. was 12 and Francois was 10. And they had begged their mother to allow them to live in the commune with Rock and the others. Guy, having the lowest status in the group, wasn't allowed to join the celebration, where all the other adults were drinking and laughing, dancing. They were just having a great time. The true story of what happened that night may never be known, but I'll give you the official version of events.
Oh, snap. Here it comes.
That night, two-year-old Samuel was crying, keeping Guy awake. And after some time went by, Guy just couldn't take it anymore, and he snapped.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Guy screamed at Samuel to be quiet, and when that didn't work, he picked the child up by his neck and punched him in the face 5 or 6 times. The next day, Samuel wasn't doing well, and so Rock ordered Gabrielle to take over looking after Samuel due to her training as a nurse. She fed him water, honey and fruit juice with an eyedropper, but Samuel was crying and shivering and not able to sit. His head was sort of flapping around on his neck, and his penis appeared swollen. Rock decided to perform an operation on Samuel to alleviate the swelling.
Hold on. Rock is not a doctor.
No, he's not.
He's going to perform a brain operation?
No, swelling on Samuel's penis.
Oh, what?
Yes.
Fuck.
He used a solution of 94% alcohol to sterilize a pair of scissors, made his incision to lance the swollen area, and urine drained from Samuel. Then Gabrielle applied a salve of iodine, olive oil, and plantain to the child's wound.
Did you just say a plantain?
Yes.
Like a banana?
Yes, like a banana. So it's a banana-ish fruit, olive oil, and iodine.
Oh.
Yeah. Before I tell you the unofficial story, we're going to take a break.
I want to take a second to thank Surfshark for sponsoring this episode. Surfshark has a great product. Surfshark provides you with a VPN. What's a VPN and why is it important? A VPN is a virtual private network, and it's important because it helps stop hackers. But there's a lot of other cool features with a VPN. I can have a virtual location pretty much anywhere in the world. And what makes that cool is it seems like I'm in Maltese right now, which throws off hackers, but it also does something really cool in regards to entertainment. I can now access shows on Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, and other streaming platforms I couldn't access before because it's all based on your location. For example, if I was in Maltese and I'd already seen all the true crime shows from Netflix based in the United States, I could access Netflix Maltese shows. It's all about the virtual location. Hackers, trackers, and malware is hiding all over the internet, and Surfshark will help you protect yourself from them. Get your own VPN through Surfshark, risk-free, with a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you go to surfshark.deals/crimes and enter the promo code CRIMES, you can get 83% off and 3 extra months free. That's surfshark.deals/crimes, and you use our promo code CRIMES. When you do that, you not only help support Surfshark, but you help support us too.
Unofficially, Giselle reported that Samuel's face had bruising the next morning, but otherwise appeared fine. She said he didn't have a floppy head and had no trouble sitting unassisted. Rock did perform an operation on Samuel that night, but didn't do it to cut down on any swelling and instead decided to perform a circumcision with a razor blade.
Oh.
Rock used the 94% alcohol to sterilize his instruments, but also poured several ounces of it into Samuel's mouth with a rubber bulb as an anesthesia.
Wait, now stop. With a rubber bulb? What does that mean?
Bulb?
Oh.
Like a squeeze bulb, I'm thinking.
They had to have burned that little baby so much.
94% alcohol.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's going to kill him.
Yeah. The following morning, Samuel was found dead.
So he didn't die as a result of Guy?
No.
Guy did punch him, though.
Yes. But the official version that I told you is what police would end up accepting is what happened.
Okay.
Okay. But Giselle basically said that's not what happened. She believed that Samuel died from alcohol poisoning. Maurice was informed of her son's death while out collecting wood at Rock's order. And at first, she continued to work, probably in a state of shock. At dinner time, Rock told the group that they needed to burn Samuel's remains because if they buried him, the wild animals may get to his body. And there's bears and God knows what else out there. Both Maurice and Jacques agreed to allow it. Claude wrapped Samuel in a sheet and incinerated the tiny body. Afterward, life seemed to return to normal to the group. However, in December, after drinking quite a bit, Rock became upset with Guy for some small infraction and decided that Guy needed to go on trial for Samuel's death. Rock assigned roles to his flock. Jacques would be judge, Claude would be the defense attorney, Giselle was the prosecutor, and Gabrielle was the coroner. The remaining members were the jury. After about an hour of debate and discussion, Rock passed out slips of paper to the jury. They reached a unanimous vote. Guy was not guilty by reason of insanity. Solange included on her vote that Guy shouldn't even be with the group because, quote, he should be taken to a psychiatric institution. He is crazy, end quote.
Well, if they're saying he's crazy, he's one fucked up motherfucker. Because they're all a little crazy.
Right.
He must just be off his rocker.
I know, and he's nuts. The one put in charge of watching children.
When crazy's calling someone crazy.
You know it's bad. This wasn't the end of it, though. About 2 or 3 hours later, Rock took Jacques aside and decided that they needed to castrate Guy despite the jury trial. Jacques protested, but Rock insisted and took another vote. This time, 10 people voted, including Rock Jr., who's 12, 13 years old at this time. He wasn't included in the original vote. And 3 of them opposed castrating Guy.
Where they're just randomly deciding someone should have their testicles chopped off?
Yes. And the three people who opposed castrating Guy was Maurice and Jacques.
Oh, the parents.
The parents and Giselle. The rest of the group was in favor of castrating Guy.
The hell is this? I know.
Why? All while this is going on, Guy was watching. He was there. And at this point, he objected. He's like, okay, whoa. Wait a minute.
Fuck yeah.
But Rock talked him into it, reminding Guy that, you know, you've been complaining about some headaches. And the headaches were a direct result of a problem in Guy's left testicle. Rock convinced him of that story. Rock also determined that Guy, I guess, maybe had been having respiratory problems, and that was due to excessive masturbation, and what better way to cure the need or want to masturbate than to kill somebody's sex drive by castrating them.
It all makes sense.
It all makes sense, right? It
makes sense.
Rock had Guy, just to cover his ass, Rock had Guy write a letter of consent.
Stop it.
And it said, quote, I said no because I was scared, and I now say yes because, anyway, the testicles are not doing me any good, end quote. Rock prepared for the surgery.
I don't know what to say.
I know. This is fucked up. Guy was ordered to lay on the kitchen table.
Poor Guy.
I know. Gabrielle gathered the required instruments, which were an elastic band, a razor blade, a magnifying glass, and eyebrow tweezers.
Oh, God.
I know. Claude and Jacques held Guy down while the others watched, with Chantal holding a penlight focused on Guy's scrotum. After the operation, Guy still had his scrotum, so I believe Rock only removed his testes. And Guy's scrotum turned purple and bled for a week. Gabrielle was assigned to help Guy recuperate, which consisted of applying saltwater compress for 20 minutes a day to the wound, and feeding him a diet rich in iron.
Salt water?
Salt water. I understand it kills germs, but...
it's also very painful on a wound.
Yes.
Especially there.
For real. After the operation, Rock started to grow paranoid that Samuel's death and Guy's castration would leak to the outside world, and Guy became the focus of his suspicions. He believed Guy would breach the security of the compound. He told Guy that if anyone asked about Samuel, he was to tell them the child was kicked in the head by a horse. But that wasn't enough for Rock. He also started torturing Guy in the evenings after drinking a lot of alcohol. Once, he strapped Guy to a tree branch and whipped him with a leather strap until his back was black and blue. Another time, he tied Guy to a post, stripped him naked, and instructed the group to get knives and stab Guy in the chest until he bled to death. This was meant as a test of their loyalty. Thankfully for Guy, Rock called off the stabbing at the last minute. But I think he just wanted to see what everybody's reaction would be, whether they would grab knives or not.
Did they?
Yeah. On November 5th, Guy escaped and walked the 22 kilometers to civilization.
He escaped.
He told a villager about Samuel's death, saying the child had been kicked in the head by a horse. Police spent the following months investigating the incident, and after about a month, 15 police officers stormed the compound with jeeps and snowmobiles, taking Rock, Jacques, and Maurice into custody on a coroner's warrant in connection with Samuel's death. The day after the raid, Samuel's charred bones were found buried in a shallow grave 200 meters from the main building after being led there by other members of the group. The remaining seven children that were at the compound were taken by Youth Protection Services and placed into foster homes. Guy had not returned to the group, and police lost track of him, but they ended up finding him in Quebec City. Eventually, Rock, Jacques, Maurice, Gabrielle, and Guy were found criminally responsible for Samuel's death and accused with criminal negligence causing bodily harm. Jacques and Maurice were also charged with negligence in regard to their daughter Miriam, who was still alive. Rock and Gabrielle were also charged with causing bodily harm to Guy with the intention of mutilating him by castrating him with a razor blade. Solange and Claude were also charged with negligence in regard to Simon because they left the baby with Guy, right?
Right. So it sounds like this is the end of your story.
I know. They...
But it's not, is it?
But it's not. Oh, no.
It gets worse, doesn't it?
Yes, it gets worse. All of them were found guilty on all counts. Jacques and Claude were sentenced to 6 months in jail and 3 years probation. Maurice and Solange each got 3 years probation.
Probation. These people are getting...
Yes. Gabrielle received nothing. 9 months in jail and 3 years probation. Rock received the longest sentence. 2 years, less a day, plus 3 years probation.
You're fucking kidding me.
On each charge, and they were to be served concurrently.
For a two-year-old's death.
Yes.
Maximum 2 years.
2 years. Guy was acquitted due to mental incompetence and was sent to Quebec City's Robert Giffard Hospital. With Rock put in jail, police torched the commune buildings and bulldozed the remains to the ground.
Nice.
So as you said, this sounds like the end. But No. Rock's followers were ever loyal to him while he was incarcerated. And he managed to get three of his wives, quote unquote, Chantelle, Gabrielle, and another woman named Maurice. That's Maurice Lambert, and I'm going to call her Lambert.
Okay.
They got pregnant while Rock was out of jail on weekend passes.
Weekend passes.
I love Canadians.
You are so pissing me off right now. I'm so pissed.
I know. Who the fuck gets weekend passes?
Weekend passes for killing a two-year-old, and he's knocking women up.
Yes.
I would say those Canadians are way too nice.
While Rock was in jail, the group relocated to a rented home in New Carlisle, and they stayed together. Rock kept in touch with Giselle, phoned her twice a week from jail, giving her various instructions. Solange began to grow jealous of Giselle, being Rock's only legal wife, and for her role in being the replacement leader of sorts while Rock was in jail. Giselle went to Solange one day and told her, "Don't be jealous, because you can take over the group in Rock's absence." Giselle wanted to spend more time with her son and cut down on all the responsibilities she had. During Rock's next weekend visit, he told the group of Solange's new role as leader in his absence. During the time Rock was in jail, Solange and Giselle became close friends. Rock was released in February 1984 and was just itching to find the group a new place to establish themselves once again. He told them he had stopped drinking and that they were going to start fresh.
Okay.
Okay. The commune moved to a large parcel of land in Somerville Township, Burnt River, near the town of Lindsay in Victoria County, Ontario. Once again, the members had to clear the land and start from scratch. They built a small A-frame cabin, a two-story house that had a kitchen and Rock's personal living quarters, a bakery, a smokehouse, a maple sugar shack.
Wow.
I know. And a 15 by 35 foot root cellar dug into the side of a hill. They also built what Rock called his sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
It was a 4-foot-high column of flat stones at the base of a huge cedar tree, located about 800 meters from the main buildings. That's where Rock claimed he would speak to God.
Okay. Rock can go fuck off.
I know. Once the group was settled, roles were assigned to everyone. On the highest rung were Solange, Giselle, Chantelle, Nicole, and Francine, who I haven't talked about a lot.
And let me guess, they're all having sex with Rock.
Of course they are. Solange kept the books. She managed the group by making sure all the chores were done. And she acted as arbiter for any arguments the group had with one another. She was also the only wife permitted to enter Rock's sanctuary. Giselle acted as a surrogate mother to the other wives and as a grandmother to the ever-increasing large group of children they had.
She can't be that old.
She isn't that old.
In her 30s?
She's probably in her 30s. Chantelle acted as Rock's personal chef and also washed and laid out his clothes. Nicole worked under Chantelle's supervision, and her main responsibility was keeping Rock's bedroom spotlessly clean. Francine was Rock's personal masseuse and gave him baths and showers, because apparently he couldn't wash his own ass. I know. I'm just like, stop, I fucking hate this guy.
I hate him so much.
And I can't wait to post pictures, okay? And I'm, you know, I don't mean to be an asshole, but...
Oh, you're not an asshole. Compared to him, you are a saint.
Francine also cooked all of the meals for the rest of the group and ran the bakery.
So they have a bakery?
They have a bakery.
Are they selling this?
They eventually do, yes.
To the public?
Yes, they eventually do.
Okay.
Okay, to make money, yes.
So ridiculous.
I know. Oh, it's ridiculous. On the lower rung of the members were Josie, who was in charge of collecting firewood and keeping the stoves hot. Lambert worked as a driver and usually was the one who cut Rock's hair. Jacques and Claude did much of the outdoor work, feeding the animals and repairing broken machinery. Gabrielle performed nursing duties. worked in the garden, and also served as interpreter when people showed up. She spoke the best English. They were all French speakers. You would think that would elevate her to the upper ring of the group, but no, Rock treated her like shit. He hated when she would show off her medical knowledge, and he felt like she was boastful and full of herself. And
that's ironic.
I know, right?
Just pointing that out.
And I'm going to tell you, he did some horrible things to her that I will tell you about later.
And she actually was a nurse, right?
Yes, she actually was a nurse.
He couldn't stand the idea of somebody
knowing more than him.
Right.
Maurice Grenier was the lowest of the low. Now, she was Samuel's mom, if you remember.
And Jacques' wife.
And Jacques' wife. In order to put a wedge in her and Jacques' marriage, Rock forbid them to sleep together. He wanted to drive them apart so they would never threaten his role as leader.
When you say sleep together, do you mean physically sleep together or do you mean sex?
Physically sleep together. They were not allowed to live together.
Oh.
And I don't know what they did as far as sex, but they were not allowed to live together. Maurice talked back to Jacques, and Jacques didn't know how to keep her in line. Remember the toes
incident? Yes, of course I do.
That was another reason why Rock just didn't like her. Jacques did beat Maurice, and she accepted the beatings because she believed she had it coming, like she had sinned, and that was punishment for her sins.
That's so sad.
I know.
Yeah, I keep forgetting all this is done in God's name, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Rock also told her that she had the mark of the Antichrist, 666.
Oh, shit.
On her, it was a birthmark she had on her stomach, and he convinced Jacques that it was this mark. Eventually, Rock ordered Maurice to live with her two children alone and away from the group in her own hut. Neither she nor her children were allowed to mix with the others in the commune, even during meals.
Was she given supplies and stuff still?
I believe so, yeah. Probably they had to eat separately, but they were given food and some consolation, right? That rule remained until Miriam, who was the oldest child in the group, was allowed to live in the men's cabin with her father, Jacques, Claude, and Rock Jr. And I'm thinking she's probably around 12 or 13, maybe? Maybe.
This doesn't sound good.
No. From then on, Maurice was not allowed any contact with her daughter. In order to have money, the group applied for welfare in Victoria County, but was continually refused based on the fact that the group was an institution rather than a family. So the commune members ended up having to shoplift a lot in order to get food and supplies from the nearby town of Lindsay. Eventually, they got caught and were banned from shopping in Lindsay ever again, and they had to perform 100 hours of community service. In case you're wondering, they were caught with about $450 worth of goods that included things like antifreeze, hacksaw blades, electrical tape, large packets of ground beef, peanut butter, garlic salt, chocolates, toothpaste, just all kinds of things that you would need. After they were no longer able to shoplift, Rock encouraged the group to contact their parents for money. But after years of isolating them and teaching them to hate their families, it wasn't a successful venture. Mainly because the families told their children they'd only be given money if they left Rock, and they weren't willing to do that.
Yeah, these family members have lost someone they love to a cult.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
They can't be oblivious to that.
No, and Rock told them over the years, like in his sermons and things, that their parents were evil and basically, and it just would continue to say that. They remained loyal to Rock. To make ends meet, the group sold fruit and pastry. As we talked about, they did have the bakery, and that was lucrative. Rock organized the group into a company, and he called them Anthill Kids because they worked together like a nest of ants. Everything seemed to be going well in the commune. Life was great.
It sounds lovely.
It does, doesn't it? Until Rock grew bored with the day-to-day monotony of life. That's when he began drinking again. When he got drunk, Rock would boast about how much property he owned and money that he had, which seems kind of ridiculous to me. The parcel they lived on was only 200 acres, which might sound like a lot, but it's not tens of thousands of acres of land. But he's like, oh, I own this land. During these times, Rock called Nicole and Chantel to gather his quote-unquote king's jewels, which consisted of cheap costume jewelry. But Rock wore it and bragged that it was all rare and expensive baubles. And everybody fucking knew it was costume jewelry. But they had to pretend to be impressed for fear of retribution. So can you imagine, he's drunk off his ass. He's wearing this fucking bullshit costume jewelry. And everybody's like, ooh, Yeah, you're wonderful, Rock.
As long as he doesn't make me listen to hours of him preaching the word drunk, I'm okay with it.
He would organize orgies with the wives.
Of course he did. Mm-hmm. Of course.
He would play Mozart and Beethoven, which were his favorites, or during which this was all going on. And when he finished, he would instruct the women to masturbate and caress each other while he watched. Not all of the wives were into it. Gabrielle, Giselle, and Lambert preferred alone time with Rock. They weren't into this whole group sex, but Nicole, Chantel, and Francine enjoyed the group activities. He pitted the wives against one another by playing favorites at times, fueling jealousy and mistrust among them. Like, he would favor one over the other, and he
was just... Oh, I get it. I've seen sisters' wives.
Anyway, Rock's drinking eventually got worse, and he started to lash out at the members of the commune, convinced they all had the devil in them and that he had to beat it out of them. Lambert once was sitting at a table, and Rock hit her on the forehead with a hammer without any warning.
What?
Causing a large cut on her forehead.
That's no joke.
No. She wasn't allowed to go to the hospital either, so Chantel stitched her up with a needle and thread.
Oh.
Rock would sometimes order members to strip naked and lie on the floor while he urinated on their heads and in their mouths.
What a rat bastard.
I know, right?
Sicko.
Yes, he's just,
I just want to rip his face off.
Mm-hmm. He forced Gabrielle to lick someone's anus, not sure who, after that person had defecated, and then smear her cheeks and forehead with their feces.
Okay, just stop for a second. Seriously, just fucking stop. I can't. Oh, my God. Okay. Oh, Rock, I'm sorry.
I know. Rock hit this group
so... What
the
fuck, Tanya?
They were so brainwashed to Leah that instead of running from the commune after these types of things occurred, they would thank him for the punishment because they believed that's how he showed love to them.
This is exactly like episode 42, the Rulo cult murders.
Yes.
If you guys have not listened to episode 42,
that was brutal.
Tanya is clearly has some inner resentment.
And it's
punishing me for that.
That episode traumatized me, dude.
I know. Now I am equally traumatized by your episode. Yeah, let's go.
It gets worse.
Stop it.
It gets worse, girl.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm sorry, guys. Let's do this.
As I mentioned, this was a way for Rock to show them love, but they also believed that he was punishing them for their sins. And by punishing them and them taking the punishment, it washed their sins away. So that's why they were so happy, I guess, to endure this punishment. Jacques was once punished for fighting back against Rock. He had punched Rock, and so Rock, like, something was happening. There was some kind of melee. He punched Rock, and Rock decided to organize a court session, like he had for Guy. Jacques was sentenced to circumcision and was ordered to sit in a chair and pull down his pants.
You know, Rock, for being a heterosexual man, has a lot of interest in
other
scrotums and penises.
Yeah, seriously, right? Someone in the group was ordered to take a knife, and as Jacques described it, that person, quote, chopped off my tip with a knife in one fell swoop.
Oh, if that's not a circumcision.
No. If that person hadn't done it, Rock would have taken care of it himself, and we all knew that it would have been much worse, end quote. And they described it as the glands of his penis.
Okay.
This wasn't the first punishment Jacques had endured. Rock once cut his jugular vein with a broken wine glass. When Rock sobered up the next morning after this circumcision, he cried and wailed and begged God to stop, condemning him to commit such violence on his flock. There was so much abuse that the members of the commune suffered at Rock's hands, and I'm going to give you a quick rundown. I'm just going to give you a synopsis of some of the shit these people went through.
All right, buckle up, everybody.
Rock once passed a welding torch across Josie's arm, back, and shoulders until the skin bubbled. He used that same torch on Nicole's stomach the day she birthed one of his children. It was her first child. After he had previously kicked her in the stomach when she was 3 months pregnant, causing a miscarriage. So that was her first pregnancy, ended in a miscarriage. He shot Nicole through the shoulder with a gun. He smashed Jacques' ribs with a wooden club and bashed him in the face with the flat side of an axe. He punched Rock Jr. in the face after the boy wouldn't fight his brother, Francois. He kicked Giselle in the head with steel-toed boots and broke her ribs. Claude endured a lot of abuse. Rock once held his foot in his hands and snapped each toe backwards, breaking them all. He sliced Claude's left arm open from the shoulder to the arm with a piece of broken glass. He pulled 11 healthy teeth from Claude's mouth.
Oh, man.
I know.
Oh, that's gonna fucking hurt.
Oh, I know. He ordered one of the women to smash Claude's leg with a sledgehammer, which broke it. He hung Claude from a beam for an hour after having Jacques bind Claude's hands behind his back and bind his feet. He ordered Claude's pubic hairs to be plucked out one by one by his wives.
Well, that's just weird.
I know. He poured boiling water over Claude's back and shoulders. He picked Claude up and sat him down on a hot stove, burning his rear end. He beat a workhorse to death once with chains and ordered Claude to burn the carcass. He forced Claude to eat human feces.
Oh, God.
He forced Claude to bite into a dead mouse for punishment for missing it when he was cleaning. I know. A fucking dead mouse. He also fired a bullet at Claude grazing his scalp. Rock once took vice grips and used them on Giselle and Gabrielle's nipples until they bled. He put Gabrielle's right hand in a vise at the sawmill and tightened it while she screamed. He lashed her in the eye with his belt. He plunged a needle into her back, gave her an injection of some unknown liquid, and twisted the needle until it snapped, breaking off in her flesh. He burned her right breast with a welding torch and singed her pubic hair. He ordered Jacques to cut off Gabrielle's pinky finger on her left hand with a pair of wire cutters. He fractured the fingers in both of her hands with a wooden board when she tried to defend herself from him. He forced her to go outside naked and cut a hole in the pond and jump in. And it was frozen. It wasn't the middle of summer.
I got it.
Yes.
I figured that out.
He threw a knife at Lambert, penetrating her right foot. He threw a knife at Francine, causing a 5-inch long cut on her hip. He once slammed Solange to the floor when she was 5 months pregnant and broke her cheekbone with his fist. That was just some of it.
Jeez.
There's more that I'm going to tell you about.
Okay, hold on. There's more?
Yes, there's more. But we're going to get a little easy right now. I'm giving you a little bit of a break in the story of the torture.
It doesn't feel like you gave me any bit of a goddamn break.
No.
I feel like a pile of shit right now.
No, this is a horrible, horrible story. And I had never heard of this story.
I hadn't either until some of our Patreon and listeners reached out to us.
Yes, so I would like to thank our Patreon member, Amy W., and our listener, V, V-I-E.
I am Sweet V.
I am Sweet V.
Yes, thank you both.
Thank you both for suggesting this and having us go down this hellhole.
Yes. So kind of you.
Anyway, back to the story.
Back to the story.
After Rock and his group had shown up to apply for welfare and were denied, the government didn't just forget about the commune. They had alerted the Child's Aid Society, CAS, and I believe they're equivalent to Child Protective Services here. And one particular social worker, Georgia Brown, kept a close eye on the group. Over the next year or so, Georgia and many of her coworkers would visit the commune, but they weren't surprise visits, so Rock always made sure that everyone and everything were in line. Georgia had a feeling Rock was hiding something, especially after observing the members over several visits, and her suspicions were found to be true on January 26, 1985. Sometime after 9 a.m., Gabrielle wrapped her 5-month-old son, Eleazar, in a blanket and placed him in a wheelbarrow outside. He was left there until 10:45 a.m., and when Gabrielle checked on him, he had turned blue and stopped breathing.
Why did she do that?
Well, I'm going to tell you. It was snowing. The temperature was 10 below Celsius, or 14 degrees Fahrenheit. Rock had hated this child and said it bore the mark of the devil because one of his eyelids was slightly deformed. He had often beaten this baby.
He'd beaten the baby.
A 5-month-old. Gabrielle felt that when Eleazar died, it was like a mercy death. It just relieved his suffering.
A mercy killing?
A mercy killing. The county coroner, whose name was Al Lackey, he was a friend of Rock's. He determined the baby died of SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, and the case was closed. Georgia amped up her monitoring of the group, and her supervisor shared in her suspicions. Like, this is just, something's going on. They invited a group called COMA, which stood for Council on Mind Abuse, in to hear about how cults and communes and places like that do mind control to control their members. So CAS is hot on the trail. And before I tell you more, we're going to take a break. So COMA is training members of the Children's Aid Society on how to deal with cult members. Jacques' wife, Maryse, she managed to leave the commune in October 1985, but she had to leave her oldest daughter, Miriam, behind. By then, Miriam was a teenager and was being groomed to be one of Roch's future wives. Social workers in Lindsay got wind that Maryse escaped and they sought her out. They had experts from COMA help them with how to approach Maryse, and when she was ready, she decided to go to court and try to get her daughter away from Roch's clutches. Maryse also gave them an earful when it came to how the children in the commune were treated. She told them that Roch split the children into two groups. One was the quote-unquote slave children, and then there were quote-unquote the chosen. He often took the slave children and had them participate in sexual games that involved group masturbation.
So he's a child molester.
Yes, too. Georgia helped to remove the children from the compound. Like, they did a whole investigation, they raided the compound, and before the authorities left, Georgia told the mothers that they would work with them to regain custody of their children, but on the condition that they couldn't live in the commune with Roch anymore. None of the women went with her, including Giselle, who had just given birth to a baby boy 2 days prior.
Damn.
I know. The children were placed in foster care, and it was apparent they had suffered great abuse. One boy would jump whenever a light was switched on. He ate only potatoes and gravy with his hands, and his teeth were yellow and black. Children at school called him Black Mouth. Another boy was terrified of any bearded man. One baby girl incessantly rocked, chanted, and banged her head. An 8-year-old girl told authorities that she was in charge of washing the sanitary napkins by hand.
Oh, what?
I know. One slave girl told how Roch had assigned her to raise a baby goat, which she fed with a baby bottle, and then Roch forced her to watch when he slaughtered the goat in a ritual sacrifice. One of Roch's daughters was interviewed with anatomically correct dolls, and she said, "I'm sorry, but I can't tell you the story because there's not enough dolls."
Oh, wow. So it was like group.
Yes. So Georgia and
Child abuse, sexual assault.
Yeah, absolutely. Georgia and the other social workers scrambled around the office. They got teddy bears and tried to get enough dolls so this child could tell the story. The girl told them how the adults would dance around a fire naked with the children. Then the adults would lay on the floor and touch one another. A boy told Georgia that he saw three of his half-sisters playing with Roch's penis by pushing the skin up and down. One girl said that Roch enjoyed it when she played with his penis and made white stuff come out. And that she and her mother took turns doing it.
Oh, God. Gross.
There's more in the book that I read for this, which was called Savage Messiah.
I think we all get the point.
By Paul Kaula and Ross Levere. But yeah, I'm not going to talk about it anymore because you get the idea. Eventually, Children's Aid Society petitioned the courts to allow the children to be made wards of the state or the crown, which they call it in Canada, so that they could be adopted out. During the court hearings, psychological evaluations were done by Dr. Martine Milkovic, who was an expert in child abuse, and she received her doctorate in clinical psychology from the University of Paris in 1972. This is so fucked. She interviewed all 8 wives of Roch. She performed psychological tests on 8 of the children between the ages of 3 and 9 for about 3 hours. She didn't test the other children because they were too young. The doctor, in her written assessment, praised Roch's pioneering spirit and applauded his courage and fortitude in leading the group back to nature.
No way.
Yeah, she wrote the government workers he had to deal with were all heartless and barbaric in their meddling in the commune's affairs and equated it as nothing more than a campaign of harassment inspired by the government's refusal to tolerate a healthy alternative lifestyle. She mostly approved of the commune's lifestyle and dismissed the accusations of serious child abuse, saying they were overblown. She ended her report by saying the children should be returned to the commune and that a Francophone psychologist, which is just a fancy word of saying a psychologist who speaks French, or social worker should visit on a regular basis.
That's just unbelievable.
I know. Georgia was incensed, I'm going to tell you. She's the worker from CAS. She just couldn't believe it. Thankfully, though, the judge assigned to the case saw through that bullshit. He wrote in his opinion that Roch was a calculating dictator who controlled the members like sheep, that there was substantial risk to the children if they were returned, and the danger was they'd be sexually molested. He ordered the children to be made wards of the crown with no parental access. The one exception was Maryse's daughter, Miriam, who was returned to her mother in Quebec on the condition that the two attend therapy as recommended by CAS.
Wow.
As for Dr. Milkovic and her colleagues who had helped her with the evaluations, the judge said their testimony was unreliable and that they had used none of the standard techniques for uncovering abuse, failed to interview the foster parents, made no psychological assessment of the natural parents, and made no findings as to how the children and their natural parents related to one another. He said their findings were, quote, disconcerting, illogical, and without any stated purpose, end quote.
I am so glad they saw through that because you had me on the edge for a second.
I know, when I was reading and I'm like, oh my God, what is the matter with this doctor? But I digress. Okay, buckle up again, Talia.
Okay.
In late 1988, Solange complained of pain in her stomach. She had been sick for some time, and Rock told her on more than one occasion that she was going to need treatment or an operation for what was ailing her. One afternoon, Rock was drinking heavily again and started picking on the group, saying, there's members that are sick. He was wearing his stupid costume jewelry during this evening. Earlier that day, Solange had been working hard outdoors on the road. She was working so hard she was having difficulty breathing, and Rock knew this. Once he was drunk, he brought Solange and Lambert into the room with the others and began choking them with articles of clothing, making it so they couldn't speak or breathe.
He's just randomly choking people?
He choked them until they turned blue. Rock then turned to Solange and asked her what she thought the jewelry was worth, and apparently her answer made him angry. He pushed her around, grabbing her by the shoulders and shaking her. She was very frightened, but Rock was only getting started. He told her this was the night where he was going to treat her illness.
Oh, fuck.
I know.
He cleared off the bakery table and Solange undressed and got on the table. Rock said, quote, I'm going to relieve your liver problem and you're going to be cured, end quote. I didn't realize it was a liver problem. I thought it was stomach problems, but whatever. He started by putting his finger in Solange's rectum and was moving it in and out. Then Gabrielle made a solution of molasses with water and oil, and Rock took a rubber bag that had been made for enemas, inserted that in Solange's rectum, and filled it with this molasses mixture.
What the hell is that supposed to do?
He's giving her an enema. He was very rough, causing feces to leak out onto the table. Rock kept putting the enema tube in and out of her rectum and telling her, oh, don't be embarrassed. Go ahead, relieve yourself. He spent about 20 to 30 minutes doing this while everyone watched in horror. Then Rock pressed hard on Solange's stomach several times, and a plastic tube was put into her stomach through her nose or mouth. No one was sure exactly which. Then everyone there was ordered to blow into it or suck on the tube.
Okay. All right.
What the fuck? Rock then said it was time to operate.
Oh, no. 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 This guy, man.
What the hell?
He's killing me here. I'm losing it.
He made a cut about 5.5 inches long on Solange's side under her rib cage on the right. He put the fingers of both hands inside of Solange and removed a little piece of fat, then something beige that was a little longer and wider than a finger and about 1/4 inch thick. One member thought it was a piece of Solange's intestines.
He removed that with his fingers?
He tore it off. And placed it on the counter beside the table.
I honestly feel ill right now.
I know. He then told Solange, quote, there, you're going to be all right, end quote.
Oh, my God.
Solange was conscious this entire time.
I can't imagine the pain.
No. During the operation and afterward, when one of the members sewed her incision shut. Immediately afterward, Rock forced her on her feet, and she walked out of the bakery to the cabin where she walked upstairs and laid down on her bed. She didn't sleep all night because she was in agony. The next morning, Claude went to check on her, and she said she didn't realize a body could endure so much pain. Then she was forced to take 2 baths. The first was warm with different herbs in it, and she became paralyzed in the tub. That's how it was described, like she stiffened. Rock was drunk and said, it's going to help you. Then he drained the tub and had them fill it with cold water. After the bath, she was taken to her bed and blood started coming from her mouth and she finally died. Later, a doctor would opine that Solange likely died from acute peritonitis caused by the leaking of digestive chemicals into the abdominal cavity. After her death, Rock wrote her a letter. Do you want to hear some of it?
No. Okay.
It's a love letter to Talia. Quote, I then took your still warm body and carried it before the altar of the master to present you to him like a lamb without flaws, and I thanked him for that which was happening. After that, I laid your body down facing the entrance to the altar. You were nude. I tore my clothes off and I lay on top of you, crying out my pain and my bitterness. I asked Jacques to kill me because I couldn't live without you. He started to cry, "No, Moses, no, Moses, Moses." I brought your body back to the house and I laid it down in my bed. I covered you with your blanket and I lay near you, my legs over your lower abdomen, as I loved to do when you were alive, and I spoke words of love to you. End quote.
I can't with this guy. I absolutely can't.
I know. As Rock mentioned, he did ask Jacques to kill him, but Jacques refused. Jacques and Claude dug a grave for Solange, and she was placed in a coffin and was buried. A few weeks after her death, Rock was convinced he needed to marry her because he had never been officially married to her, and the ceremony was performed on October 22nd, 1988, with Giselle filling in for Solange.
Oh, this just gets so damn weird. I'm with you. How do you marry a dead person? Go ahead, tell me.
There were points where he had the group dig up Solange.
I knew you were going to say that. I absolutely knew it.
And they did it a couple times for various reasons. And eventually they were just so upset. They were like, we have to stop doing this. And they ended up, I think, burning her remains.
He just gets more and more twisted as the story goes on, just like you had warned.
Yeah, exactly. It gets worse.
We're going to have to make t-shirts that say that. It gets worse.
It gets worse. For real. In the late fall of 1988, Rock visited a man named Alex in Big Water, Utah. Alex was part of a religious sect that Rock wanted to learn more about. I believe he was part of a Seventh-day Adventist or a Mormon society. During the visit, Alex and Rock were in Alex's office to talk, and Rock brought with him his five wives.
That must have been quite a sight.
Oh, my God. And Alex did have multiple wives. That's okay. What makes me think he's Mormon. During the discussion, Rock drank, and he got totally fit-chased.
Ooh, that is when you're extra shit-faced.
Then he wanted to have sort of a man contest with Alex, and Rock challenged Alex by demanding they take down their pants and apparently compare their penises. But Alex was like, this is dumb. I'm not going to do this. But that didn't stop Rock from taking down his pants and showing off his magic wand, as he called it. Then Rock turned to Giselle and told her in French that he wanted her to show off her nice haircut to Alex. Prior to their visit, Rock had attacked Giselle along with Nicole, and Nicole had helped him hack off all of Giselle's hair, and actually they cut her scalp. She had since shaved her hair, and now Rock wanted Giselle to show Alex.
Did she have a hat on or something?
Yeah, or like a headscarf. In English, she began to say she didn't want to, but before she could finish her sentence, Rock grabbed her headscarf and yanked it from her head. Giselle put her face in her hands and she was crying while all the other wives were cowering in a corner. Alex asked her how it happened, and Giselle, embarrassed to say the truth, told him in French, quote, think what you will, end quote.
Was it because it was so bruised or just because her head was shaved in
general? Shaved and had the scalp cut and everything. Uh-huh. Rock was in rare form. He told Giselle next to lower her pants to show Alex the scar on her stomach and legs. And when she did, she said that he was cruel and evil.
She said that?
Yes, which once Rock heard this from her lips, he punched her square in the face.
Were those scars from that welding?
It's possible. I don't know if she was cut, right?
He's proud of what he did.
Oh, yeah. He turned to Alex and said, see, if you want to learn how to teach them, stick with me. Alex didn't laugh in response as Rock thought he would. Instead, Alex was appalled.
Thank God there's someone relatively normal.
Relatively normal. He got in Rock's face and picked him up and threw him in a chair in the corner of the office. And Alex was an ex-Marine. He shouted at Rock not to move and that, quote, we don't treat women that way around my place, end quote. Then two men appeared with pistols at their sides. Rock didn't know what to think. He stared with wide eyes at Alex, thinking Alex was going to kill him. All of the wives stared in startled silence as well, and Giselle took this as her opportunity to get the fuck out of this room.
I just got goosebumps when you told me somebody actually stood up to
Rock. Yes. Yeah, right? He's been getting away with this bullshit for years. Giselle ran out of the house and into the desert where she slept all night. The next morning, after Rock spent all night in a drunken rampage, monitored closely by Alex, Giselle came back to the home and encountered Alex's wife, Elizabeth. Elizabeth hid her for the next few days, but by the time Rock decided to go back to the compound, Giselle went with him.
No.
Yes. However, after she saw the confrontation between Rock and Alex and how Rock had backed down, Giselle realized that you could stand up to Rock and prevail. She also realized that the certain Old Testament type of beliefs Rock had when it came to his wives, meaning that they weren't allowed any freedom, was quite different from how Alex treated his wives. They had freedom. They had jobs, bank accounts, and could come and go as they pleased.
They weren't beaten and severely abused.
Thank you. They also had the right to say no to Alex when he wanted sex, which is something none of Rock's wives were able to do without suffering severe punishment for it. Giselle also couldn't get Solange's death out of her mind and the savage way that Rock treated her in life and death. That winter, Giselle went back and forth from staying with her parents at their home and the compound.
He let her go back and forth?
He did let her go back and forth.
I'm surprised.
I know. She begged him. She felt incredibly guilty if away from Rock and the others for more than a few weeks and always returned. So even though she was away, she always came back. Now, I mentioned and alluded a little bit earlier that Gabrielle suffered a lot of torture.
Yeah, you did.
At the hands of Rock.
Yes, you did.
She did. In October 1986, she was suffering from a prolapsed uterus.
What?
Which was extremely painful for her. She worked hard manual labor, and this made the pain worse until her uterus was protruding 3 inches from her vagina.
Stop, Tanya. Just stop.
Rock refused to allow her to see a doctor despite seeing the physical pain she was in. He said he knew better. One evening, he had the group force Gabrielle onto a table and hold her down.
You're going to tell me something so awful. I know.
Oh, I am. God. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, everyone.
I am physically clenching up right now.
I'm so sorry. I'm sorry, everyone.
Okay, do it.
She was held down while he tried punching her uterus back inside of her.
Oh, my God.
That same night, he carved a cone-shaped piece of wood.
Oh, no, don't. Oh.
You know what I'm going to say. And he jammed it into her vagina, then made her wear it in a harness all day around her waist.
Okay.
To keep it in place.
We got to pause for a second. Can you hit pause, seriously?
Yes.
Fuck. Okay, we're back. Tanya broke me, guys.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Literally, Tanya just broke me.
I'm sorry.
Okay. What the fuck, Tanya?
The next day, she was ordered to tend the vegetable fields, but she was in terrible pain.
Oh, yeah.
She removed the contraption that Rock made her wear the night before. She was terrified. She ended up running to a neighbor, the nearest being Marsh and Goldie Dudman. She told Goldie about her prolapsed uterus and that she wasn't allowed to go to the hospital. The Dudmans did what they could for her, but didn't call the police and didn't take her to the hospital. That night, she spent the night in a women's shelter in Felon Falls, and ended up returning to the group. Rock tried other treatments.
Oh, okay.
It's bad. Okay.
I'm going to tell you these too?
I'm going to tell you what else he did. Such as tying a string around the portion of her uterus that was protruding out of her body, and he tried to yank it out of her insides.
Okay.
I know. Of course, this only caused Gabrielle more pain. Finally, in 1987, a full year after she fled the group and sought out the Dudmans, Gabrielle went to the hospital during one of Rock's trips to Utah, where he went and visited Alex. She received a partial hysterectomy.
Oh my God, that was a whole year.
A year she dealt with this. This fucking had to hurt every single moment of her day.
And he probably was trying to have sex with her.
Oh.
I'm just saying.
After her medical treatment, she returned to the commune. While the Dudmans didn't seek police help for Gabrielle, they did end up confronting Rock about the way he treated his wives. And after they left, he was pissed that Gabrielle went outside the group. A month after Solange's death in 1988, Rock accused her of betraying the group and told her he was going to teach her a lesson. That night, Gabrielle had been complaining of a toothache. So to teach her to keep her mouth shut, he took a pair of pliers and savagely removed 8 of her teeth. Then as she was bleeding profusely from her mouth, he took a hunting knife and chased her around the room. In the struggle, she grabbed at the blade and it sliced through 2 tendons on her right hand. Terrified he was going to kill her, Gabrielle fled the compound and showed up at a women's shelter 2 days later. She lived at the shelter for the next 3 weeks while dental surgeons tended to her mouth and doctors operated and implanted wires in her hand to replace the tendons. After the surgery, they put her hand in a cast and told her she needed 2 months of physical therapy. In early December, Rock went looking for Gabrielle and found her at the women's shelter. When the staff told her Rock was there, she agreed to see him. When he saw her, he begged her to come back home and that he would never treat her this way again.
And the cycle continues.
Yes, she returned to the group with Rock.
Mm.
But it wasn't long before Rock was back to abusing her.
Of course not.
One night after drinking a lot, Rock started ranting and raving about the incompetence of the doctors who treated Gabrielle's injured hand. He ordered her to hold out her arm. He ripped off the cast and examined the wires. He believed the wire job wasn't going to work, so he grabbed some pliers.
No.
Peeled back her skin.
Stop.
And tore out the wires out of her hand. She fled out of fear but returned. Her hand ended up healing, except she had some stiffness in her pinky finger. But this wasn't the end of her abuse. It only got worse. On July 26, 1989, Rock wanted to inspect her pinky finger. He motioned her over and asked her to place her right hand on the corner of the table in front of them. She complied, and before she knew it, Rock had plunged a large hunting knife through the back of her hand, impaling it onto the wooden table. He wanted to make sure Gabrielle didn't run this time. The pain was excruciating, and Gabrielle didn't move a muscle. For the next 45 minutes, she stood there while her blood pooled on the tabletop and trickled onto the floor. Rock returned and surveyed his handiwork. After 45 minutes, her entire arm had turned blue. She hoped he would show her some mercy, but Rock had other ideas. He found a small curved carpet knife and jabbed the pointed tip into Gabrielle's right arm between her shoulder and elbow. She flinched at the pain. Then Rock started carving out small pieces of flesh from her arm and throwing them on the floor like he was whittling a piece of wood. He worked his way around her arm to the bone, slicing through her muscles and tendons. Rock called Chantel over to complete the job since by now he was too drunk to finish whatever bloody plan he had. Chantel cut and scraped at Gabrielle's arm until her bone was exposed all around her arm in a small band where flesh used to be. But that's still not the end. Rock then grabbed the knife that he had used to impale Gabrielle's hand to the table, yanked it out, freeing her hand.
Not much good it's going to do her now.
No. The knife was still through her hand when he led her to stoop and told her to kneel on the floor. He then put her arm on a wooden stump and called Jacques over to hold her down. Rock took a cleaver and brought it down with all of his strength, swinging at Gabrielle's arm. With the first swing, he missed. However, on the second swing, he cut through her bone and her arm fell to the floor. During this ordeal, Gabrielle did not scream one time. She laid on the floor the whole night, writhing in agony after this was done.
Was she just in shock?
I think. Had to be. The following morning, Claude took Gabrielle's severed arm and burned it. Chantel stitched up Gabrielle's arm with twine after soaking her amputated arm in a saltwater solution.
Of course.
Yes.
How come she didn't bleed to death?
I know. That's what I wonder.
They must have done something. Otherwise, she would have just bled to death.
Right. Maybe they tied it off like a tourniquet. I didn't read that there was a tourniquet, but maybe. Gabrielle tried to recuperate, but Rock wasn't convinced it was going well. He still wouldn't leave her alone, Talia. Sometime after the amputation, Rock told the group that what was left of Gabrielle's arm, she was left with about 6 inches of arm from her shoulder, was infected and gangrenous. He again held Gabrielle down and made 3 incisions in her arm and cut a 2-piece inch of flesh from her right breast. I don't know why. Explaining, though, that the procedure would help the infection go somewhere else in her body. So apparently it would leave her arm and go to her breast.
Well, what good's that going to do?
I know. He then hit her with the flat end of an axe in her head, which cut her scalp. When she was freed, she ran from the house and spent 2 nights out in the wilderness. On the second day, which was August 11th, she woke to find insects had laid eggs in her open scalp wound.
Of course, Tanya. God damn. Oh, my God. You just got to throw in larva now, too.
I'm so sorry.
These are like my worst nightmares. I hate larva.
This was the sickest fucking story I think I've ever read. Anyway, Jacques was sent to find Gabrielle, and when he did, he had her return to the compound. When she returned, Rock was drunk again and wanted to do more surgery. Rock instructed Jacques to fire up a torch and fetch a drive shaft from one of the old vehicles that didn't work. And I'm thinking a drive shaft is probably like a long pipe, something like that.
I don't know. I'm not a mechanic.
Jacques did as he was told while Nicole and Chantel cleared a space on the floor. They stripped Gabrielle and tied her left arm to her ankles. That's the arm she still has. They then held her down while Rock held a piece of metal to the torch and heated it until it glowed red. He then jammed the fiery metal against her amputated arm and scorched her flesh. He also kept dropping the hot piece of metal, and by the time he was done, not only did Gabrielle have her flesh melted on her arm, but large welts of burn spots all over her body. Finally, 3 days later, on August 14th, Gabrielle finally left the compound and Rock's abuse for the final time.
Thank God. Praise Jesus.
I know. On August 16th, she arrived at the emergency room of York County Hospital, and the police were called. Rock was arrested for assault on Gabrielle, and this was the catalyst for what eventually would be the end to the Ant Hill Kids. He was found guilty of assaulting Gabrielle and received a sentence of 12 years in prison.
No. No, no, no.
Assault.
12 years.
Yes. Even though the commune started to dissolve, Rock managed to father another 4 children while incarcerated. In addition to reporting her own abuse, though, Gabrielle told authorities about Solange's death. In 1993, Rock pleaded guilty to second-degree murder for Solange's death and was sentenced to life in prison.
Finally.
Finally, he stopped.
What's that? 10 years in Canada? What is life?
I know, seriously. Rock was transferred to a medium security prison in Dorchester, New Brunswick in the year 2000. In 2002, he was rejected for parole. I can't believe he applied for it. But the parole board said he was too high a risk to reoffend, and Rock never applied for parole again.
He would just do it again.
Of course he would. He's a snake oil salesman.
And women have no value to him.
Mm-hmm. On February 26, 2011, at the age of 63, Rock was found dead near his cell at Dorchester Penitentiary. This is kind of just desserts, maybe. His death is believed to be the result of an altercation with his cellmate, Matthew Gerard McDonald, a 60-year-old convict who committed murder. He was charged with killing Rock. McDonald pleaded guilty to second-degree murder and was sentenced to life in prison, having already been serving a life sentence for a previous murder charge. McDonald had stabbed Rock in the neck with a shiv, walked to the guard station, handed them the weapon, and proclaimed, quote, "That piece of shit is down on the range. Here's the knife. I've sliced him up," end quote.
Yes, perfect.
Right.
Perfect ending.
Perfect ending. So, after all of that, Talia, that is my story of the Ant Hill Kids of Rock Terrio and these poor people.
That was really, really hard for me.
Oh, he did so
really hard.
Much.
It was really gross, really
disgusting.
Sad.
Disgusting. I just can't believe people endure this. And I feel sorry for them that they were brainwashed so bad that they were willing to put up with this abuse from someone. This was just a sad, sad story of terrible domestic abuse. Terrible child abuse.
Animal abuse,
everything. But I'd just like to remind everyone there is a national domestic violence hotline. And if someone you know or yourself is in a situation where you could use some help, the number is 800-799-7233. Or you can text START to 88788.
I'm going to be thinking about this case for a while. And your face, if you tell me, you're a sick puppy too.
It was so depressing. At one point, I stopped writing it because I was just so disgusted and I didn't want to continue. Even though I had read the book, I'm like, do I have to relive this again?
Right.
Like going
I know
through
how
the book,
is.
You know how it is. So anyway, well, thank you everyone for listening this week. And if you haven't done so already, please hit the subscribe or follow button. You can find us on social media, on Instagram or Facebook at Hardcore True Crime. You can go to our website,
crimesandconsequences.com,
to find out more information.
You can find out more information on merchandise,
yep.
Our Patreon page with, yep. We have 170 different true crime stories. And you can also subscribe on Apple and get all these episodes ad-free and early and then get a whole bunch of
unreleased episodes. You can also go to patreon.com directly, patreon.com/TNT Crimes. And they are the same episodes that are on the Apple subscription, in case anyone's wondering.
Next week, I'm going to do a story on unicorns and butterflies. to counteract what we all just went through.
No, she isn't. She's lying. It's going to be another doozy.
It's hard to top that one, Tanya. That's a ten on the gruesome scale. Thank you guys all for taking the time to sit through that. Though I'm suspecting that many people had to pause that.
Yeah, we actually had to pause.
We actually literally did pause for me to get myself together.
It was hard. So, well, thank you everyone for listening.
Don't kill each other.
Bye.
Bye.